This is Chris Albert, and I'm here to remind you of one thing. Someday, you're going to die. Now, that's not some morbid statement or scary idea. It's solid fact. Your time here on this earth is limited. And you need to be reminded of this as much as possible for one simple reason. To live your best life while you can. This is the Warrior Soul Podcast.
What is going on, everybody? Welcome to the Warrior Soul Podcast this week. And I've got a really awesome guest this week. His name's Matt Cipolla. He's a U.S. Marine Corps veteran, and he's known as the Money Smart Guy throughout social media. Now, Matt owns an insurance agency, and he's been in this business for quite a while. And then he partnered up with a guy named Patrick Bet David over at the PHP agency. If you don't know who Patrick Bet David is, he's all over YouTube, talking about capitalism, talking about running a business. And I wanted to bring Matt on this week because I watched one of his videos and it was absolutely inspiring. You know, his goal is to educate people on financial literacy. And one of the things he's trying to slam home to communities that he works with is that capitalism is an awesome thing. It allows you to be able to pursue your dreams, to pursue a life that you want, and it really is the best way to go. And so what he's been doing is educating people on financial matters, mentoring people, so many people, on how to run their own businesses and how to run their own insurance agencies. And he's just a really great guy. Like I said, he's a U.S. Marine Corps veteran, and we had a great time talking today. Before we get into that conversation, I just want to say a couple of things. If you haven't been to this podcast before, this is the Warrior Soul Podcast, and my name is Chris Albert. And the reason why I started this podcast a few years ago is because, well, over the past decade and a half of war, the U.S. veteran community has been facing a whole host of different issues, ranging from really high veteran suicide rate to high rates of homelessness to high rates of chronic disease. And there's been a lot of people out there trying to raise awareness about these issues. But here's the thing. I want to do more than just raise awareness. I'm not just trying to stop veteran suicide. I really want to help all veterans to truly live. And that means that we need to be delivering solutions rather than just raising awareness. And that's what this podcast attempts to do. I try to deliver tools, tactics, and strategies to help the U.S. veteran community to live their best lives. And if you're not a veteran, hang around here because all of these tools can really be applied to anybody. So that is what we're about. And on Mondays, we release interviews like this with awesome and amazing people. Last week, we had Captain Dale Dye, who is a military advisor to Hollywood. He's helped create things like Saving Private Ryan and The Pacific and Band of Brothers. And we've had a lot of other amazing guests on as well. And this week is no different with Mr. Matt Cipolla. In addition to that, we also have our Wednesday fitness notes. That's where I answer questions about fitness and health and nutrition. That's my background. I am a trainer and strength and conditioning coach. And then on Fridays, we do our warrior notes. And those are just short episodes that go into a mental tactic that you can use to gain better mental strength and be better prepared for this life. So in all, I hope you find all of these episodes helpful. And all we ask for in return is that you let people know about the show. You spread the word about it, share these episodes out. And if you can, pay us the highest compliment that you can by writing us a positive written review over on iTunes. It really helps with the show growth and it really helps to get people to understand what we're about. Beyond that, I just want to say that this podcast would not happen without the good people at F-Bomb Nutrition. They make awesome, delicious packets of fats. And I'm a huge fan of their macadamia nut butters. They mix them up with chocolate. They mix them up with sea salt, with coconut butter. They're so good. No sugar in them at all. and that's my dog barking. But we're going to keep going. No sugar in them at all. And, you know, you can get 20% off of your first order of F-bombs over at www.dropanfbomb.com when you use the code WarriorSoul at checkout. And with that, I'm going to stop talking right now and let's get into this conversation with my devil dog brother, Mr. Matt Cipolla. Matt Cipolla, man, how you doing?
Outstanding. Semper freaking Fi, devil dog.
Semper Fi, my man. Dude, so last week I watched one of your videos and it just inspired the hell out of me. And, you know, yeah. Having been in this game for a while, you know, a lot of times I'm looking around on the internet and my bullshit detector is like way up to here. But I was like, this dude is a real honest dude who really wants to help people. So I did some more searching, found out you were a veteran. And I was like, this guy's got to be on the Warrior Soul podcast. So thank you so much for coming on.
Dude, I'm just humbled that you even said that, brother. So I appreciate it. Honored to be on.
Absolutely, man. So let's get a little bit of the backstory. You served in the U.S. Marine Corps. When did you start, man?
So I was 91 and 99. That was my time. Officially got out in 02 because I was in the reserves. But active duty straight up, 8 years in Marine Corps. You know, my tours of duties was the Persian Gulf War. It was Operation Restore Hope in Somalia, Africa. I was in instructor duty. I was a helicopter mechanic, crew chief, door gunner, and a 50 cal. So that was part of my thing. I was part of the 15th Marine Expedition Unit, 31st Marine Expedition Unit out of Okinawa. So the last 2 years of my time was straight up instructor duty, which I think was the most glory freaking field part of my Marine Corps career, is being able to teach Marines, being able to teach the new up and coming, you know, Lance corporals and corporals how to make sure that they, you know, are operating in a theater of combat and come back home safely to their loved ones. So that was my time. And it was just, you know, packing a whole lifetime of stories and experiences in 8 years.
Wow. Yeah. That's it's funny how the military comes full circle with like that, because, you know, everybody has an impact on the next generation. Everybody has an impact on the next generation, and the things that one generation learns, it gets passed down and then so on and so forth. And it's kind of like this evolving body of knowledge that we're constantly going through.
Right. Right. Because, you know, your first enlistment, you're kind of figuring out I'm a private first class. I'm a Lance Cooley, just triggering my MOS. I only have maybe a year, 2 years in the fleet. By the time two and a half years in the fleet, by the time you got up, you know, I got done with, you know, MCT and got done with my helicopter training school and crew chief school and door gunner school. And then you're in the fleet. And I remember coming out of school and like, dude, those are freaking helicopters. Yeah. Can I fly in one of those? Can I go? And says, yeah, you want to go on a float? What does a float do? Yeah, they deploy all over the world. I want to go. Yeah. What's the next thing we're going out? And it says, and then next thing you know, we went out. And next thing you know, we're on our way to Australia. We go to Hawaii, on our way to Australia, Singapore, on our way to Australia. And I'm, right? And next thing you know, the whole ship's captain's whistle. I can't even barely whistle right now, but the whole ship's captain's whistle. This is the captain speaking. You know, we are being redirected, right? Mm-hmm. And they say, oh, we're going into combat. We're going to the war. And it's like, well, I thought we were about to have fun. I'm about to take some pictures. I'm about to go visit Australia, Fosses Fabia, right? And next thing you know, bro, we're going into war.
Oh, man. And you were heading up to the Persian Gulf from there?
Yeah. Persian Gulf. And you're, you know, it's kind of weird when they say, Cipolla, go down to legal and then make sure your SGLI is intact and make sure your will is signed. Like, what? Mm-hmm. 18 years old. I mean, the last thing an 19-year-old is thinking about doing is making sure their beneficiaries are in order and their will is signed. Like, who are you going to give all your money to? I'm like, what? Like, my SGL, my mom. I don't have nobody.
Yeah. Yeah. What was that experience like? Because, you know, the Persian Gulf Wars, it was so much, I guess you could say, enthusiasm around that. I was a little kid when that was going on, and I was watching it going on TV. and you're like, you know, that there was so much kind of pride that we were protecting this country, Kuwait. And, you know, you're watching it on TV. It seemed like the media was completely behind it. What was it like actually being out there?
Well, just the same situation with all my combat tours, especially coming up, is I didn't know what the heck was going on. I didn't know what the big picture was. Mm-hmm. What the hell's Kuwait? What the hell's Somalia, Africa? What's me dealing with the UN? All we knew is this is our mission. you know, and when our company commander says, you know, 30% of you guys are coming back, that's why you need to get this stuff filled out. You're like, you're kind of freaking out. You're writing letters home. But, you know, I didn't know the geography of where we're at. I mean, Persian Gulf, what the hell is Persian Gulf? You know, so I, you know, lack of, you know, it's not like the Marine Corps recruited some of the smartest people in the United States, where multicultural middle-class kids come from nowhere, just looking for a job, just looking for a career after high school. So I think for the most part, I understand it now, but when I was going through it, not knowing the geography, not even knowing the geography or the realm that I was in, it was just, you know, how do I just survive the next day and how to make the most of the information that they give us and do our mission, come back home.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny, you know, talking about the Marine Corps is kind of like this multicultural society. You know, I was looking at my playlist a couple of weeks ago and I've got, you know, NWA, I've got Ice-T, I've got Waylon Jennings, I've got David Allan Coe, and, you know, all these things that just don't go together. And I got that, I think, from the Marine Corps. You know, it's just like, you know, being exposed to so many different types of people you know, just a great time in your life. And, you know, aside from the obvious dangers and everything like that, you're young. You don't have any bills, really. You don't have to worry about really paying rent. You don't even have to worry about what you're going to put on that day, because you know what you're going to put on that day to wear. And it's a great time where you could just focus on mission at hand and learn. And being around people that you know and that you like and that, well, most of the time like, you know, it's a great time that I think a lot of young people while they're in just don't get. And us as older guys can look back and we can say, damn, that was a good time in my life.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially right now in this era where racial tensions are so high. You know, I reflect back on my Marine Corps career. Did I see the fact that a guy was white? Yes. Did I see a guy was black? Yes. Did I see a guy was brown? Yeah. But I saw them for who they were, but that's not what they were. Mm-hmm. Right? The outside is, you know, white, black, brown. But what do they teach at the Marine Corps? We're all green.
Right.
We're all dark green, light green. Because at the same time, brother, bullets and bombs, it's not racist. If you're in the way, you don't have your head down. If you're not doing your job, it's going to come after you. And so I learned to embrace our differences, not to be divided by them. And I think if America today was to look at things like that, I remember, listen, Tupac talk about thug life. Mm-hmm. You know, you talk about those different, Biggie Smalls, all those different things. And, you know, I'm thinking about reflecting on that. You're right, because you go into a barracks, one side you hear country music, other side you hear heavy metal. The other side here, R&B. Other side here, hip-hop. But, you know, at the end of the day, we ran in the same formation, man.
Yeah, man. And it's the funniest thing, because I remember first time going out on Libo, I was in ITB, Infantry Training Battalion, right? And, you know, you're talking to these guys, and you don't recognize where they come from, really. You might hear the accent or something like that. But we're all getting ready to go out for Liberty. And I'm from the East Coast. I'm from Connecticut. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
So, we have an Italian guy, you dress a certain way and everything like that. So I'm there, I show up, I got leather shoes on, I got jeans, I got a button up shirt, got my hair like spiked up with whatever I could because it was a high and tight, you know what I mean? Yeah. And then my buddies show up and you got a dude who's dressed in like baggy clothes with his like collared shirt tucking in, but even though it still looks kind of, you know, it looks kind of hip hop. And then you got a guy who's wearing cowboy boots, a huge belt buckle and everything like that. You don't realize it until you get dressed up for Libo. That's so funny.
Yeah. You see your differences, or the guy that wears core frames in his jeans. You know what I mean?
Yep. Yep. Exactly. Exactly. You know? Exactly. Well, dude, how did you first get interested in finance and money?
I got interested in finance because I took a green monster, a green logbook, and I did my best to track my money. Mm-hmm. And I get a $400 check or a $600 check or $800 check every 2 weeks. I know it sounds kind of crazy for me to even say that, but I remember those are my checks. And I kind of put it down in a ledger where my money would go. Mm-hmm. So I do my best. And this is the days before direct deposit. So you either had it in the Navy Federal Credit Union, mm-hmm. or you had cash in your wallet, right? You cashed your checks. This is, you know, before we got direct deposit. That was until I decided to get married. right? And then the whole budget just flew out the window. You had a kid, boom, budget flies out the window. And you realize, dude, I can't even support myself as a corporal in the Marine Corps, in the military, E4, over 2 years, over 4 years, over 6 years. Dude, I need to get promoted, man. And how do you get promoted? Well, you got to go through meritorious boards and you got to take the hazardous duties. You got to go deploy more. Mm-hmm. So I deployed to make another extra $100 here, have CPAY, you know, have all that extra stuff. And, or I remember Sergeant Satchel, when I was in Okinawa, he had six kids as a sergeant in the Marine Corps, and he was locked on Okinawa. He's from Chicago, but he's locked in Okinawa, couldn't really come back to stateside because he'd lose his overseas pay.
Right.
And so I really started understanding, man, you know, dude, we are getting locked in pigeonholed in our career because of financial situation, our economic understanding, or lack thereof.
Right. And that's not, you know, just the military. There's people out there doing jobs that they absolutely can't stand for the paycheck, just to have it come in. They're stuck there. You know, that's a common story amongst the American middle class right now, right?
Yeah. And my first wave of understanding that shock value was my experience in the Marine Corps. You know, for most guys, they're 17, 18, 19 years old in the Marine Corps. That's our first full-time job.
Right.
So I'm realizing, man, and it wasn't until a retired master sergeant who approached me, of all places, in the bathroom of a Best Buy right there in Lake Forest off of Oso Parkway up to 405. He approaches me. I'm in a bathroom with my kids. They're going to, you know, I'm helping them do their thing. And he asked me a question. Are you going to stay in the Marine Corps? I said, I'm a freaking lifer. Of course, that's the knee-jerk reaction, right?
Yeah.
And I really, really believe I was a lifer. But, you know, that's what you were told, especially coming back from a couple deployments, because now you're salty. Mm-hmm. He asked me a couple questions. Chris, he says, you like money? I'm like, yep. He says, you like a lot of money? Yep. Here's what hit me. Well, do you know the rules? No. Well, do you know anybody that knows the rules? No. So, but you like money, you like a lot of money, but you don't know the rules and you don't know anybody with the rules. It's like you're talking out of two different sides of your mouth. Because if you like the Marine Corps, if you like sports, you read books and you're surrounded with it. Right? You listen to it, right? But if you like money, you say you like money, but your actions prove that you really don't like money. If anybody helped me out with that, I said, no. Would you like some help? So anyway, make a long story short, he recruited me into the insurance industry my seventh year in the Marine Corps because I realized a career jammer wasn't going to get me to the next financial level of my life. And based on the lifestyle I wanted to live, the freedom I wanted to have, I realized, man, Marine Corps, because I was exposed to another world, which is the rich side of San Diego, the rich side of Orange County, the rich side of Newport Beach and Balboa Island and Laguna Niguel. Where, listen, I don't need to be on a USS warship. I want to be on that guy's 80-foot yacht.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. It's interesting to hear you say that because, you know, most of my time I was out at Lejeune. And, you know, I think the rich side of Lejeune was the Marine Corps.
You know, you're probably like, one of them type battalions.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, when you're a young private and you're just heading out, and there's so many things that you can waste your money on. There's car dealerships all over the place with ridiculous interest rates. And this might not sound politically correct, but there's women all around the base who are looking to get a piece of your paycheck, looking to get a piece of that pie. I saw a lot of guys get tied up with all kinds of BS like that. There's also the ancillaries. I mean, you had the liquor stores, the strip clubs, and there was a place where you could give your blood for money.
Yes. I used that money to get my first tattoo, man.
Yep. And so in that environment as a young Marine, you could have everything set up because, like I said before, you don't really have to worry about many bills when you're younger. You don't have to worry about too much. You could have yourself set up if you play it smart, but if you're not smart about it and you start spending your money on crap, then in that case, you're going to get yourself locked up into one of those situations. And by the time you get married, by the time you start a family, you're going to be tied up and you might be stuck in a position, right?
You know, I realized, Chris, after 10 years in the armed forces, 8 years active duty, two in the reserves, two and a half in reserves, I realized that Uncle Sam paid me $250,000 over 10 years of my life. And I've got nothing to show for it, but a bunch of stuff in my 1997 Nissan Maxima. Obviously, the only good thing that came out of it was my son, mm-hmm. who's now 23 years old. But that was it. But I couldn't rub two quarters together. Remember DPP, the deferred payment plan,
yep.
which is now AFEES. You know, just getting, you know, owing money. If you don't owe money, if you owe money, they just jack it out of your checking account and they write a page 11 on you because you're not paying your bills.
Right.
So, you know, the shock there is two, 3 months before I was supposed to get out, we take those TAPS class, those transition assistance program classes, TAPS class. That's when I received my first financial education class. This financial planner comes on base. All of us are getting out. He starts telling us about the compound interest and how to budget and how to put your money. I was like, dude, where were you at the beginning of my career? Because yeah. I don't need a budgeting class 2 months before I'm supposed to get in. I got $0 coming at me. Right? So, and today still hasn't changed. And that's why I'm doing what I am doing today, educating veterans and entrepreneurs alike to be more money smart.
That's awesome. So when you got into selling insurance and in the insurance industry, what types of did your mentor give you training? How did you start with that?
So I started. I would fly my missions at night so I could be at the financial firm during the day. So I volunteered a flight night crew. So I'd fly from I have to be on base at 1600 and we get done at 0200 dark 30, right? And so that allowed me to sleep for about 5-6 hours to get to the financial firm by 9 o'clock Pacific time. So I can start just understanding this world and wow, they're all rich people aren't jerks, and some of them were, of course, but wow, that's what it's like to make that type of money, to help a lot of people, and the lingo they're saying on the phone and the clientele that they were helping. And I was just getting used to being around normal people, which is, I thought was kind of cool. And he showed me his presentation. I would sit and take notes on his presentations. And after listening to about a dozen times, it's the same joke, the same intonation, the same, that's how we would. He taught me a system of storytelling to educate a client, to trigger them emotionally. And that's why people buy insurance, or that's why people put money away for retirement or the kids' college education. Because insurance and retirement services aren't something that people wake up every day and buy. These are still things that people need to be sold. And so you sell it in a way that engages them, so therefore they're empowered to buy, right? Lots of guys in the insurance industry sell, and they never get anywhere. He taught me that process. And then, so I did that for 12 years. And then about, 2010, 2011, that's when I went into the media, with TD Ameritrade and MSN Money. But yeah, that's what he initially taught me.
What types of obstacles did you have in your own head during that first year or so while you were doing it? Like, what did you put up resistance? Did you try to, say that the system wasn't going to work for you or anything like that? What was going on there?
Oh yeah. I mean, a whole lot of self-doubt because, in the Marine Corps, even though you had doubt, you kind of kept that to yourself. You kind of kept that to yourself and you still followed through with whatever the mission was because you had camaraderie there with your brothers. Right. And in the civilian life, you have self-doubt, but nobody else is doing it but you. So you kind of like wondering if this is the right thing to do or not. And when I remember a client, I think objection handling, dealing with people's excuses. I couldn't deal with that. It's like, I don't want to do it. Well, I got to think about it. Listen, in Marine Corps, we never said I'll think about it. People, my family, this, my wife, this, we still did it anyway. Mm-hmm. So I just realized civilians, man, it's like, there's a whole lot of, can I really do this? Can I sell? Do I got to choke everybody out? So me adapting to the current new battlefield that I was in was learning this new skill of not scoping my target, but learning skills to communicate to my target, right? Learning to grow professionally with my mouth in my brain, in my ears, and I need to shut up. And I need to learn how to ask more specific questions so I can hone in. I can zero in on their situation. And so I think with me coming out the Marine Corps, I had no problem with not having a boss. I think that was a very freeing thing. But I think just dealing with people, that was the hardest thing for me to deal with. And I think today I still have some residual with that. And I'm still working on it today.
You're still working on that today, really?
I'm still working on it today because it's that knee-jerk reaction when people give me excuses that the Marine in me still kicks in. Mm-hmm. The athlete in me wants to kick in. Like when you're spotting somebody, right? Chris, you're spotting, come on, let's give me two more. People, right? Give me one for the Marine Corps. People don't know how to do that at the civilian level when it comes to their finances. So how do I translate that from physically and vocally to mentally and from a coachability standpoint?
Did you ever accidentally knife hand anybody?
Right? double knife hand, man. Maybe turn it into a back slap, but yeah, pretty close.
So there was this kind of learning process, and like you said, it's a lifelong learning process, trying to deal with your own resistance, deal with your own psychology. And you've been able to grow into a very major business, and you've done that by also recruiting others to kind of mm-hmm. duplicate yourself. And when did you start realizing that was something that you could do or that was something that you should be doing to grow your business?
A client was sitting across from me from a boardroom, and he goes over to sit next to me on the chair next to me for a specific reason, for him saying, I like your chair. What's the difference between my chair and your chair? No, it's the same chair. But the difference between your chair and my chair, I, as your client, I get up from my chair, I go back to my dead-end job that I dread. Mm-hmm. But you get up from your chair because you're on your own business. You do what you want. You go take your wife out for lunch. You go vacation. You can say, I'm going to make a lot of money this year. I like your chair. I like the life that you're living. I like your chair, brother. So I'm like, so Louie, you're asking me to teach you what I do? He goes, I'd love to do what you do. I'm like, dude, I don't know how to teach you, man. I guess you get licensed. I got licensed in California. I'm in Chicago now. You get licensed. I don't even know how to tell you how to go and find your clientele. I just kind of fell into this thing. So what I realized is people love the life I was living. I just didn't have a way to teach it. And ironically, here, Chris, I've got my first notes from 1998 that I took as an entrepreneur.
Oh, man.
Right? And I've got notes in this thing. And by the way, I was a very bad student. If I was a good student, I would have been in the Marine Corps. Mm-hmm. But I became a good student because I know if I wasn't being a good student to grow and develop, that financially speaking, I'd be broke. And today, these days, we put into a nice blueprint for our guys. But I didn't have a system or a process to teach what I knew, condense it into 30, 60, 90 days, and give it to other people. And I realized that people want to do what I'm doing because most people today are overworked. They're underpaid. They're underappreciated. They're undervalued. They're not happy. And so what I realized that the blessing that somebody gave me coming out the Marine Corps, or to give me a choice to get out the Marine Corps, to give me an opportunity to go in business for myself, even though I was in the insurance industry, it was still a blessing just to be an entrepreneur.
And when you take people on as agents, is there any perception amongst them that, as far as adjusting to this new type of work, do they have problems adjusting to the concept that this is work and that you do need to be disciplined about it? And what types of obstacles do you commonly see there?
Two major obstacles. Number one is the guy that's having to wrap their mind around digesting money and financial strategies and being able to communicate complex things in a very simple way. Right. And the first person they got to sell is themselves, because the people that we generally recruit are people that love the lifestyle, but man, they don't want to do the work.
Right.
Right. It's like, dude, you want to make $100,000 a year, but you want to take a, $5 an hour mentality to this thing. Dude, if you want to do $100,000, $200,000 income, type reality, you got to do that type of work too as well. And you got to be a student of the business. You got to show up on time. You got to take notes. You got to attend conferences. You got to grow yourself professionally. So I think that, again, that's where my people skill has to evolve and coach people, because the Marine in me was just to put them to boot camp, right? I just want to get him in line, get him information. Or as you said earlier, I want to knife hand him. The flip side to the obstacle to that is the guys that do get it. Mm-hmm. They become students of the business and they end up making a lot of money. They're making six-figure incomes. The obstacle I face there is they make so much money in such a short period of time and they think they work.
Right.
But they ain't working, man. Like one of our first ladies, she's an accountant. And her first month here with us, she's about to make $8,000, $9,000, $10,000 in a month. It's more money she's ever made as an accountant. I think by the time the whole month ends up, she might make like 12 or 15 grand. She goes, "I'll make more money in 4 months here, 5 months. I'll make more money here in 1 month than I will in 4 or 5 months, 6 months at my job." So what I have to sell to her is that business is all about ups and downs. Job gives you salary. Right. But business gives you commission and profits and revenue, but you still have to keep the foot on the gas. Right. You just can't hang around the office. Bureaucracy, you show up, you get paid. Military, right? You do the least amount as you can to get away. You skate just to get your paycheck and you do the least, but you get a paycheck. Right. In business, you do the least, you don't get paid. You don't eat.
Right.
You better max out. So, that's the dichotomy that I'm facing. Guys that don't get it, they'll never ramp up in business. And that's an obstacle. Second part of that is they do get it. They make a lot of money. I got to convince them to get back to work, but which is more fun. I think that was more fun.
And what types of, is there any traits you look for in agents, specific types of individuals or personalities or anything like that?
Yeah, I think a competitive drive. Mm-hmm. They got to be competitive. They have to have a deep desire to want to be somebody. Got to have a chip on their shoulder. You know, they have something to prove. I don't like guys that are entitled. Take off. You know, if you're entitled to success, be gone. Are you entitled to do successful work here because you have a pedigree or you have a college? Or you have a resume, forget about it. That's what I love about this field, or the field of capitalism and the system of free enterprise and entrepreneurship. It's a level playing field, man. I don't care if you got a PhD or an MBA or a college degree, GED can kick your ass because he's willing to do the work. So, you know, that's what I love about this industry. So those are some of the things, because I still don't have a college degree. My wife and I, we run a multi-million-dollar business. We bring in 7 figures a year. We still got a lot of work to do. And by the way, we don't think making 7 figures is a lot of money either. Mm-hmm. I asked my wife the other day, with a business and a family of now coming on 5 kids, we're expecting one in February.
Oh, wow.
I said, when did you, yeah. I told her, babe, when did you start feeling a little bit of freedom? When did you start feeling a little bit of financial freedom? She says $750,000 a year. You know, that's with 4 kids and, you know, the right diet, the right, you know, savings, and we pay our taxes and we're creating jobs and we're putting money away. She started feeling freedom 750 a year. So, and by the way, it's getting more and more like that. Cause I remember growing up, it was, you know, cheap the cost of living was inexpensive than it is today.
Right. It was a lot less expensive.
Yeah. A lot less expensive.
Yeah. And I remember, you know, $100,000 was a lot, you know, $100,000 a year was a lot of money for a lot of people. And now that's, you know, people are complaining about it and it's interesting, man. It's crazy how times have changed.
100%. I think the fact is, I think they said 4 out of 10 people making $100,000 a year are feeling paycheck to paycheck.
Wow.
Yeah. I think according to USA Today, the financial freedom number to have your head at least above water was between 117 and 134 a year.
Yeah. And it's crazy when you think about that on the global scale, because, you know, something like $33,000 puts you in the 1%
of the world.
Right. And that's insane to think about. A lot of the world, they live on way below that.
Like, yeah.
And it's crazy. So, you know, I was looking at some of the PHP agency videos, right? And I'm looking at the way you guys do things, and it seems like it's like awesome, like party, like people are so happy, and you guys are doing these kind of rallies and everything like that. Tell me a little bit about the PHP agency, why you ended up partnering with them, and why it's different. Why is it different from the rest of the insurance industry?
So I got introduced to Patrick Bet David by a mutual friend who's a pastor in LA, West LA. His name is Pastor Dudley Rutherford, who my sister introduced to him because she was working for him as a director of ministry. And by the reason why my sister ended up in LA is because she was formerly in Orlando as an Orlando Magic girl and a dancer for Disney. She wanted to be a Laker girl. And so instead of being a Laker girl, she found Jesus. Anyway, make a long story short, she introduced me to Patrick David through Pastor Dudley Rutherford. And here's the thing, because in order for me to teach other people how to do what I did, I needed a system, I needed a process, and as you pointed out, I needed a culture.
Right.
Because the typical age, let me ask you this question, Chris. If I said the word financial advisor, I said the word insurance agent, and I needed you to put an illustration in the brochure, an illustration for Webster's Dictionary about who the typical insurance agent looks like, you know, based on age, gender, and nationality. So let's start with gender. What do you think the typical agent is, male or female?
Typically, probably male.
Yep, typical male. Older or younger?
I would say probably younger. Most of the ones that I've ever dealt with were like mid-20s, something like
cool.
that.
Cool. And then what nationality, ethnic background?
Usually Caucasian.
Yeah. So you got two out of three right. Mm-hmm. So it's typically male, it's typically Caucasian, and it's typically the typical insurance agent is 59 years old.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. So this year, one out of four insurance agents are out of the industry based on just natural attrition and retirement.
Right.
So the industry is facing as a whole because the current industry had failed to recruit another generation of insurance agents that's going to work under their wing to take over. It's like the Marine Corps not recruiting 18, 19, 20-year-olds anymore. Mm-hmm. And expect a bunch of sergeant majors and majors to run the military. You know, forget about it.
Yeah.
So that's what the insurance industry did. And so number one, what makes us different is the average age is 33 years old. And we are a multicultural agency. 53% of our company is Latino.
Oh, wow.
So I'm Filipino by ethnic background, but there's a good 40% of my business that's Spanish speaking. And what I love about our system is that we're able to recruit and train and develop agents to go back into the marketplace, to go back into their demographics, educate their marketplace, and give them, hey, if you don't know anybody in the marketplace that does this type of work, I do, consider me the next time you think about money.
Wow. Wow. And is that something that was a strategy from the beginning, or was that developed over time? Was that something you guys ran into and just saw?
For me, I got invited in 2007 to the first ever multicultural conference in Vegas at the MGM Grand, sponsored by Allianz. And Allianz is pretty big. It's one of the largest financial groups in the world. Everybody in Europe knows who Allianz is, Allianz. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so I walk into MGM, and for the first time ever, I see African-American, Latino, I see Asian. I see women. Women is a big minority in our demographic marketplace, which of our companies, 53% women. PHP agency is 53% women. The highest income earners of our company are women. And the industry just failed to recruit a multicultural demographic. And that was 100% the reason why PHP agency was started in October of 2009. It's going to be our birthday this Saturday. 9 years in business. Oscar De La Hoya is an active investor in our company that invested into the infrastructure, or he invested $10 million into the infrastructure of our company to grow it.
Wow.
And so 100%, it was intentional from the get-go.
Wow. And you guys have like, there's like a multimedia platform too. I mean, the Valuetainment channel that Patrick Bet David does, that's centered on around a lot of what PHP agency does. There seems to be like a real educational backdrop to everything you guys do, right?
Yep. It's how to do this, how to hire employees, how to negotiate your next office lease, how to deal with anxiety and depression. How do you, you know, so there's a lot of things that helps any entrepreneur successful, regardless of they're with PHP and CRM. That's why our CEO called it Valuetainment.
Nice. And then, so with what you're doing with Money Smart Guy, what was your goal with Money Smart Guy? What have you been trying to do with that, and how have you been adding to that bigger picture?
The initial goal in 08, 09 was because they couldn't say my last name in the media. You know, so, I mean, God bless you, man. You said my first and last name properly. What a devil dog.
I did some research on that.
But the media, they see my last name, Sapala. They said Sapala, Samula, Spatula. What the hell? You read my freaking last name. Sapala. Anyway, I was doing work with the Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago, and they had something called the Money Smart Week. Because they did so much work with the Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago providing free financial literacy classes, they ended up calling me the Money Smart Guy. So initially, the Money Smart Guy was just because that was just my nickname. It became a handle because people couldn't spell Matt, two T's, not one, or pronounce Sapala. So Money Smart Guy just became the brand because it's so much easier to say. Mm-hmm. So my goal, to answer your question, is that the Money Smart Guy is injecting capitalism, free enterprise, entrepreneurial principles to the veteran community in transition, or to any entrepreneur out there that's looking to grow a business. So you know, the whole world transition. And a lot of us, regardless if you're in the military, not, you know, I just sat down with an athlete, Spice Adams, 2 days ago, and professional athletes are in transition. Mm-hmm. Like, they were at this height of income and esteem, of platform and exposure, and then rapidly they become a has-been.
Yeah, it's something like 75% of ex-NFL players file for bankruptcy in 2 years after they retire, right?
That's right. We interviewed Anthony Walker, who had a $100 million career, drafted by the Celtics, went to win a championship in Miami. Today, he's broke. Mm-hmm. You know, and by the way, it's usually the good guys that end up being broke because they can't say no to their crew.
Right.
And so now, thankfully, he's got a job with Northwestern Mutual. He tells his story, gets recruited to speak at different colleges, that the student athlete's about to go pro, about how to be smart with money.
Nice. And so you're focusing with your content on that veteran community there. I think that's awesome. You know, and one of the reasons why I think that's awesome is because one of the reasons why I started this podcast was because about 5-6 years ago, you know, when the veteran suicide issue was being brought forth, I saw a lot of people talking, putting the number 22 everywhere, trying to raise awareness. But nobody was really giving solutions, right? And I had a real problem with that. And what I see you doing here is you're actually giving viable solutions. You're actually showing people how they can set themselves up, you know, and money is not the key to happiness. But if you don't have money, I've been there before. Yeah. You're not very happy.
Yeah. So yeah, money's definitely, you know, when people say, well, it's not all about the money, well, kind of is, because we live in an economic world. And so, you know, money ain't going to buy you happiness. You're right. It won't buy you happiness, but it sure removes a lot of distractions and arguments.
Right.
So, my challenge is how to be more money smart when it comes to this type of conversation, because when you're considering that most people have depression when it comes to lack of money, or, you know, lack of resources. And what I realized too, brother, is that the windshield, if you're going forward, the windshield is a whole lot easier to look at than the rearview mirror.
Right.
And all that shit you've been through, that's depressing to look at. And by the way, if you're going forward and you're looking at the rearview mirror, you're bound for an accident.
Yeah. Yep.
So that's why I love entrepreneurship, because I try to distract guys with competition. Right. I distract guys by starting a business. I distract guys so therefore they could be more hands-on and create a new baby, you know, and they have a new patrol. They have a new mission. They have a new agenda that they're now pursuing, and they want to develop something instead of having a service dog, which is awesome. Now you have a service business, and that becomes your...
That gets your focus on what's going on right now in the moment. Keeps your head out of, you know, all that stuff from the past. And that's an important point that I think it was Evan Hafer brought that up at Clubber Talks, that the CEO of Black Rifle Coffee.
Yeah.
He was trying to talk about, you know, even though it's very centered on being a veteran, Black Rifle Coffee is more about more than just being a veteran, right? It's becoming a worldwide brand right now. And it's because he's focused on that windshield rather than the rearview mirror. With what you're doing right now, what are some of the biggest mistakes you see young guys making when they get out of the military when it comes to financial success?
I think that the number one is they don't plan for finding a career or a way to replace the money that they were really making in the military when they get out. Uh-huh. And they just lean on the GI Bill to live on. They lean on, guys are living on $1,600 a month, $2,100 a month for the post 9/11 GI Bill. Okay. But, here's what I understand too. Like I see a lot of guys every day with a ton of education, but they're still not bringing in money.
Right.
So especially if you got a family, especially now if you're single, I totally get it. You know, shack up and that's an error to be broke because you're only responsible for yourself. But number one is that while still in the military, they buy a car with 4-year financing or they buy a house. I think one of the worst things veterans can do is actually buy a house. Why the hell are you going to buy a house with a VA loan? You're obligated to pay for it for 30 years. And you only might be in the military for 4 years in this specific area.
Right.
And to me, that's a big rip. And then they leave the Marine Corps, they leave the military. It's not like the obligation to pay that mortgage is done. Or pay your car payment is still done. You still have to pay those things. And that adds just another barrier of stress, a burden of stress on a family and a young service members leaving the military. So that'd be number one. And just not being prepared for that transition from a reality standpoint. And the reality is, even though if you have 6 months to get or a year to get or 3 months to get out, they think they just don't need to work with urgency. So brother, 3 months passes by just like that. 6 months passes by, a year passes by. Just don't think you don't need to make the decision now and start fostering, planting those seeds now. So therefore, when you do get out, you have a year of making the right decisions versus starting from scratch when you get out.
There's certain things that are held up, as carrots too. When you join the military, I mean, the concept of a VA loan to buy a house, right? That's something that goes back to like World War II, where giving veterans an American dream, the GI Bill, right? And I have to admit, I'm somebody who fell prey to that. I hid out in school forever, man. I got two masters.
Yeah, of course.
I was working on a PhD. I was living off of that post 9/11 GI Bill and just doing it. And I've seen a lot of veterans who are just going back to school just to get the GI Bill even when they have families. And, I think that one of the things you need to understand, number one, a college degree isn't what it used to be.
Yeah. Right?
It isn't what it used to be. It's not a guarantee that you're going to make a living, right?
Yeah.
It's not even a guarantee that you're going to eke out a living. Number two, I think that you have to understand your purpose in a lot of ways. And you really have to focus on finding that first before you commit yourself to going to college, buying a house, settling down, because you don't know what your purpose is when you're just getting out of the military. And to tie yourself to a geographic location or to tie yourself to a degree, it's kind of limiting your options.
Yep. And what I'm realizing too now that I've been out now for a minute, it's going on with 17, 16, 17. And so I've been out longer than I was actually in, which is kind of a weird evolution, but yet I still carry a lot of the military stuff with me, Marine Corps mindsets with me, that the Marine Corps, man, what a short chapter is of your life, right? And you got to deal with you for another 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years, Lord willing. So, and one of the great things about the Marine Corps or a military career is that you got exposed to so much in those 3, 4, 5, 8 years, whatever it was, that most people never live throughout their lifetime. And so I think a lot of military service members getting out don't give themselves enough credit for the work ethic and leadership and the type of person they're going to be to any company, let alone a business. Because we starve for recognition. Like, how many times have you been in formation? Like, what the hell? He's getting a NAM, he's getting a Navy Commendation Medal. I was busting my ass harder than he was. How come I'm not up there getting an award? I'm getting a medal on my chest. Well, here's a scenario. Now we're in business. As an entrepreneur, you can get reward for what you do, man. And I don't think enough guys give themselves enough credit they can do it.
Right, exactly. You know, and that brings up another point, and I know we got to wrap up pretty soon, but I wanted to ask you this because just the way political times are, you're dealing with a multicultural segment of society with PHP Agency, right?
Yep.
There seems to be this concept out there that democratic socialism or socialism might be a better way than capitalism. And, you know, from what I've seen of Patrick Bet-David and yourself, you're trying to educate people about the virtues of capitalism and what it can do for people. Mm-hmm. What are people not getting?
I think a lot of folks love the handouts. We love the benefits. We love those type of things. But the flip side to that, there's a cost to that. And in understanding capitalism, like if it's a level playing field and if you're willing to do the work, why should somebody else benefit from my work when they weren't willing to go after it?
Right.
So capitalism for us, both Patrick and I, we do not have college degrees, but yet we run this, you know, nine-figure company. He's a decamillionaire. I'm a multimillionaire. But the degrees never defined us. But having a shot to be a capitalist, an entrepreneur, has. And so, you know, one of the ways I'm teaching my kids, because the kids are going to school all the time, and they're being exposed to a lot of liberalism, a lot of socialism, and your father. Matter of fact, I have him wear a shirt. I'm a capitalist. You know, I believe in capitalism, and just the basic principles of you bust your tail, you get rewarded. You work long, nobody gets in your way, but you're the one that benefits from all that work, versus having to take out a percentage of that. That, you know, so there's things that we believe that socialism, sure, that's left wing capitalism, right when this is meant to be. But I think if you're flapping both wings together, mm-hmm. man, this country can elevate and take off.
Right.
You know, so there's bits of both that we both agree with. But if I'm going to say, you know what, if it's all left to me, the tenets and the principles of capitalism is what we resonate with the most.
And I think that there's this misperception out there that if you're wealthy, you somehow stepped on somebody's throat to get there. And you know, with you particularly, yeah. and with Patrick, I think the reverse is true. You've gotten wealthy by helping people. And
yeah.
by really taking care of people and treating, you know, the members of your agencies the right way and getting them motivated to do work for themselves and all of this different stuff. And I just think that there's so many misperceptions about what capitalism is, that it's this evil thing, when the reality is it could be the great equalizer. It could be the real thing that helps us all to get to where we want to go.
100%. It is a great equalizer, and it's provided, the fancy word is economic mobility, that I can start from being broke, but if I understand the principle of capitalism, I can take the little bit of money, the little bit of knowledge I have, apply it, get a return on that money financially and entrepreneurially, and get myself to the next level. That's why guys like us can go like this and teach others to do the same, because we're leading with moral authority of what capitalism has done for us without crossing somebody, without being the you know, what was the thing with a Wall Street, that movie Wall Street, you know, greed is good.
Greed is good, yeah.
Yeah, but to an extent, you know, there's greed in all of us. I mean, the reason why people are running over each other on Black Friday is because they're not necessarily buying gifts for other people. They're buying gifts for themselves at the best price.
That's
greed. But if you're using that greed in a positive direction, again, that's what doesn't lead. Because what leads in the news today? Crisis, controversy, and conflict.
Right.
Those three C's. If it bleeds, it leads.
Right. Big time. So,
right? Because that sells advertising, that sells eyeballs. You know, and so what we do necessarily isn't what's exposed.
Absolutely. Now, I know you're all over social media. You're money smart guy on Instagram, on Twitter as well. You're also on Facebook, correct?
Facebook, yep. LinkedIn, yep.
Facebook, LinkedIn, and YouTube. If somebody were to want to inquire about working with you, working with your agency and things like that, where would they go?
Yeah, I'd say go to our website, Money Smart Guy. I have instructional videos on my YouTube page. We're building a new playlist right now. A couple of new playlists that we're building is, you know, the Money Smart Millionaire series, you know, episodes for veterans and other entrepreneurs and how to get a business, start a business. You know, one of the videos is very popular for is how to start your own independent agency. So I'm showing the things that we've done in our life to save people time, money, a lot of headache. If people want to go in business for themselves inside the insurance industry, or those principles are free to use if you're having a, you know, a desire to open a coffee shop or a restaurant or a franchise. It's the same principles, because money, being money smart, being an entrepreneur, that is a mindset, right? The mindset of a rifle in a Marine's hand is different than a rifle in a foreign country with some other guy holding the same rifle. Why? Because we have an ethos, morals, and values, and principles that's behind how we operate as Marines. Right. The honor, courage, commitment, all that stuff behind it. So, but yeah, a much smart guy. We have a place to find me. If you want to get ahead financially, and entrepreneurship is a vehicle that you're considering, we have a great series for that.
Awesome, Matt. And one more question here. If you could go back to meet the 18-year-old Matt Cipolla prior to stepping on the yellow footprints, prior to, you know, everything, what would you tell him?
I say, number one, find the right relationship for your life in terms of girlfriend. How many times we see in the Marine Corps, you know, you get this girl, because the hormones are taking over. But listen, man, sex, you're talking about 18-year-old Matt, right?
Right.
Sex is a small part of a relationship. It's a very important part, but it's a very small part in building a life with someone. Thank God my wife and I today, we've been together, you know, 7 years now. We've been married 3.5, going on 4. She has been a godsend to me. Mm-hmm. And as much as there's distraction with women, and especially in this world with Instagram, so many girls putting themselves out there, unfortunately, in ways that, you know, aren't, in my opinion, you know, and by the way, judge me on that, because I'm raising twin girls till they're 17. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to teach values in my kids that you don't get the right eyeballs by putting your ass in your flesh up on Instagram. You're going to get the wrong eyeballs.
Right.
You're going to get the wrong character. And if you want to build a character, principled, valued, moral life, if that's something that you're interested about, Matt, at 18 years old, which I know you have a programming for, that's why you listen to the Marine Corps, is that you got to find the right personal relationship in your life to not be distracted. So that's why I give a lot of props to like LeBron James, even though I'm not a big basketball fan. Of course, I'm a Jordan fan, right? Chicago. But I give props to LeBron James. You know, there might be things that I may not know, but listen, he's been with the same girl since high school, all this crazy on top of his game, all this money, and he's still with the same girl.
Right.
All the money in the world, all the power in the world, still with the same woman. Very proud of him. And so I think you need to find out what you're looking to attract in love, not just because she's got a cute ass, whatever the case may be, a cute face, whatever. That is fleeting. And so I'd be heavy on that, because that then will lead you to commitment. Because I believe just your business life is just an extension of what's going on in your personal life.
Right.
If you shore up your personal life, your business will express it. And I think if you get that part of your life, you get connected with your spiritual life. You discover what that is, what that means to you. Because listen, you can't figure this out all on your own. You think you know a lot, but you don't. But that would be the first couple of things I'd tell my 18-year-old self.
Yeah. And it's always wise to remember there is nothing that could break you more than a bad relationship or the nothing that could break you
horrendous.
More than that. I'm talking from vast amounts of experience.
Yeah, one of the hardest things to have to deal with, man, is a broken heart. I remember my heart feeling broken very first. You know, big bad Marine. I remember sitting in a payphone. Remember back in the day, being a payphone with a phone card. And I remember the helicopter turned. So, Paul, let's go. And I just remember just feeling my heart just sink. I'm like, what the hell's going on?
Especially on Okinawa, man, because it's an island and you can't get off that much. You can't get off that thing.
Sitting there
in Okinawa is like, you're in this tropical paradise, but after 2 weeks, it's like, what the hell? Yeah.
But what base we got in Oki?
I was up at Schwab on UDP.
Oh, so sorry for you, brother.
There was one woman on the whole base. It was awful, man. But
you know, she sure looked good.
it was what it was, man. You know, that just typhoon parties, all that stuff.
Poncho liners.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. It was good times, man. But, yeah, yeah, that's definitely, if you're young and you guys are living your lives, just live your life. Don't get yourself wrapped up in anything until you have the knowledge, the ability, and the room for a relationship like that. And that's advice from a couple of old guys. So,
but old guys, yeah. And then you bring a kid, you make a mistake with the wrong woman, you have a kid in the world, and then you have conflict for at least another 18 years. Mm-hmm. By the time you're our age, you get the wrong girl, you have a kid with her, you get married, you divorce, your financial life is ruined, your military career is set back because of this. You don't think it is, but you know, there's a lot of decisions you can make. Like, I wanted to do MSG. I want to become a Marine security guard. I want to guard an embassy. I couldn't do that being married. You got to be a single guy for 3 years.
Yep.
You know, so there's a lot of doors. The doors are wide open at 18 years old. You make the wrong decision, boom, a lot of those doors close, and some of them never open back up again.
Yeah. No, definitely, man. Definitely. You want to stay present on the moment where you are, and when you're doing something like laying your life down for this country, you really want to be present. You don't want your mind wrapped up with too much useless crap. So
100%.
Well, dude, I want to thank you so much for coming on today. It was a real inspiration talking to you. And like I said, I'm going to put all the links to every way to get in touch with you, to get in touch with your agency, everything like that up on the show notes. Any last words before we go, Matt?
You know, listen, I especially in this time in the country we're at right now, there's a lot of indecisions. There's a lot of, you know, political craziness, you know, racial divide, whatever the case may be. Listen, here's one thing. I can care less of what your color is. I just care about if you worry about one color, and that color is green. Because you've solved the money aspect of your life. You solve the personal life. You remove a lot of arguments. You remove a lot of conflict out of life. You get the money aspect, you're less squared away. The income, the key that controls your income controls your life. If you're able to take back control of your income and who controls it, then you become the master of your own destiny. So,
outstanding, solid advice. And for everybody out there, you know, take these notes down. Go. I really highly suggest you go over and check out some of Matt's videos and see what he's about even more. And you know, apply it and get out there and live your best life while you can.
Awesome, brother. I'm putting you on my Instagram stories right now, brother.
What's up, everybody?
We're So Podcast, right? Chris, allow me to be on the show.
Yep.
Honored, brother.
What's going on, everybody?
Awesome, bro. Cool. I got you, man.